Coming at you from the frozen tundra that is East Central Alberta, Canada, streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Rumble, and Odyssey. Welcome back to the workshop where we create community, find freedom, promote preparedness, and share success. I'm Toolman Tim. Today is February 29th, 2024. This is episode 430 of Workshop Radio. Happy Leap Year Day, Happy Leap Day, whatever you want to call it. It's great to see all my fellow delinquents out there. Great to hear you. Great to see you, as always. All right, let's jump in with a rule to live by. And I put it into the old magic machine, hit a number randomizer earlier today, and we came out with rule number 19. And this is one that I absolutely will admit that I struggle with at times, but it's something I've tried to live my life by. Rule number 19, always do the hardest job first. And why is that? Well, there's a lot of reasons, but if you look at a job, at least for me, especially when I am overwhelmed ever so slightly, and I think I've got so much to do, what I like to do, and some people say, you know, get a quick win, do a little thing. The problem is I like to busy myself with busy work. So if I've got a huge project to do, I'll, you know, spend some time warming up out in the garage, organizing things, cleaning the truck, whatever it happens to be. So the thing that you are dreading, the thing that you, that gives you that little bit of anxiety in your stomach when you think you have to do it, whether it's firing somebody, whether it's going to a customer and saying, you know what, I screwed up, here's a refund, or let me fix it. So it could be the hardest work job or the hardest stress job, whatever it is. But I tell you every single time, if you do the hardest thing first, you'll have a happier life. You'll have a hell of a much better day and you will be way more productive. And if you've ever seen the old, I saw a lot of pastors do this, especially in Bible college. They would do this illustration where they would say, I got these rocks, I got this pebbles, I got sand, and I got water. And they say, well, you know, can I put, which order do I need to put them in? And they always say, put the big rocks in first, then the pebbles, then the sand, and then the water. So get the big things out of the way. The hard things, the thing that's on your brain when you go to bed at night, when you get up in the morning, do that first. And life will be just a little bit better. Let's take a look and see who I see in the Delinquents Lounge this afternoon. What are you talking about, Tim? This evening. Got Byron Roberts in here. We got Ellen Kerr. Good day from down under. And Byron says, are we leaping into prepping this week? I think we are. Leaping somewhere. I don't leap a whole lot. I'd hurt myself if I leaped, but you know how it is. Wired Edge Workshop. Good evening. Good to see you. I don't believe, and if you've been in here before, I apologize, but I do not believe I've seen that name before. Angie Marie, good to see you. And Red Moose Farm. Yo, Tim and Delinquents. Happy Leap Day. Great to see you, Steve and Mrs. Steve. Absolutely. I got announcements coming up later on, but I got to throw this one out first. Becky, Mrs. Toolman, is also going to be speaking at Self-Reliance Festival this year. Huge step for her. I'm stoked. I'm excited. I can't wait. And yeah, it's going to be a good time. So we'll see everybody there. All right. So let's dive in. What do we got first this week? Well, let's take a look.
Nothing like eating under an open sky, even if it is radioactive.
Dropping the dime on precious metals. All right. So we have this week's Dropping the Dime on Precious Metals is ever so different. Not really, but instead of an article, I want to share a resource that I came across recently. And so I will say that I'm a geek. Okay. Yeah, I know. Tim, you're a geek. We all know this, yes. But I love precious metals. That's just one of my hobbies or passions or side hustles within prepping, whatever it is. Anyhow, I also really appreciate holding on to as much of my money as I possibly can. And in Canada, I did find a site recently, but this is going to be an American site because, again, you know, 70 to 80% of my audience is in the US, but I will try to remember to share the Canadian link. This is called findbooleanprices.com. Now, it does exactly what you think it would do. It scours the web. It reminds me way back. Okay, I'm going to go back here, folks. This is what this gives away my gray beard, I know. Anybody remember WebCrawler? And their shtick was it went out and it crawled the web everywhere and it came back with a database of the internet. Well, that's what this one does, but I'm sure it takes a lot less time than WebCrawler used to have to. So findbooleanprices.com scours all of the reputable silver and gold websites, and they come back every single day. You can refresh it. I don't know if anything will change since I did earlier, but right at the moment, the cheapest price, if you can see it, I'll try to highlight it here for you. Silver Gold Bull, free shipping at $199. American Silver Eagle, 1 ounce random year. Oh, I love it when I can get eagles for a good price. So right at the moment, $26.65. So let's just give it a quick refresh. There you go, $26.74. So we waited and we lost 9 cents. But no, anyway, so this is what they do. See, I mean, it's really nothing more to it other than that. So they'll do today's silver and gold prices. They got the random years. I always find the random is the cheapest. And in my experience, and your mileage may differ, but anytime I've ever ordered random from any bullion distributor, I'll either get the newest year or the second newest year, and they'll always be the same year. That doesn't mean that that's the case. Sometimes they'll use it to dump older ones, but it's all 1 ounce of silver, so don't worry about it. So if you want 2024 American Silver Eagle, a little bit of a premium, $27.51. You want a tube, $546.20. Silver Gold Bull is the best for the randoms. Bullion Exchange is the best for 2024s. And my favorite part about this is it shows what shipping's going to cost. Because if you guys ever go on, say, eBay, and you type in cheapest price with shipping, it's not always super reliable. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just because I'm in Canada and they lose something in the conversion, but I like this that it shows you right here. And if you're so inclined to pick up some of the more expensive bullion, if you're looking for the more yellow variety, well, they got a 2024 American Gold Eagle, 10th ounce, Gold Club Direct, $233.87. Those are pretty, those 10th ounce. So, yeah. So if you're looking to save, because here's the thing, if you're into prepping, and if you're not into prepping, I'm going to ask you, what are you doing here on This Week in Prepping show? I'm just kidding. It's great to have you. But if you're into prepping, you're probably into stacking silver. I don't know. And you know, I'm sure there's a few out there who buy it for collecting, you know, like the Numastic. Did I get that right? Anyway, the fancy ones that people buy for a premium. But most preppers I've met are just looking to have silver and gold on hand in case, whether it is, you know, devaluation of the dollar or something significantly worse. So the best way to build the highest stack, the fastest, of course, is to find the cheapest price. So findbooleanprices.com is it. I'm not sponsored by them. It'd be great if they wanted to. I'll give you that. But yeah, anyway, so there you go. All right, what do we got coming up? Oh, let's take a look back here. Wired Edge Workshop says Tuesday's live, I think. I came out of the woodwork. you know what? You fit in great here with a name like Workshop. Hardway Homestead, Alaska, great to see you. And my good brother, Kerry Brown, who is building an online empire himself. Give him some love, guys. Strong Roots Resources. He's been doing some regular lives. He's hitting the email marketing like crazy. But more than that, he's been building the life he wants to live. And I'm proud of you, brother, so keep it up. Okay, what do we got? Here we are. You guys know that face? So next is Sunshine Prepper News from Willow, otherwise known as Sunshine Prepper. She's our roving reporter who scours the interwebs, finds a story that means something to us in the preparedness field, shares it with us with her own brand of sunshiny light, and at the end always finishes up with what I would call a solutions-based approach. And that is what we do here. We'll never be doom and gloom. I might be a realist. You know, I'm not a pessimist, not an optimist. I'm right in the middle. So we will talk about news stories that affect us, but we're always going to try to do it on a bent with solutions. So here we are, guys. Let's give Willow our attention and give her a listen.
Hello, and welcome to today's Sunshine Prepper News. I'm Willow, the Sunshine Prepper, here to spread a bit of positivity on the unavoidable doom and gloom. Today, I'm going to read you an article that I find astonishing. I did have to chop out a few chunks so the video isn't too long. If you want to read the whole thing, link is in the description. Take a nice deep breath and a big sigh to prepare yourself for this one. All right, so this article is about an article from the New York Times. Here we go. For the past 2 years, nearly every reference in the U.S. media to the February 2022 invasion of Ukraine by Russia has been preceded by an obligatory word, unprovoked. The public was told that this was a war without cause, that Ukraine was blameless, and that the invasion was to be explained entirely in terms of the intentions and psychology of one man, Russian President Vladimir Putin. However, on the weekend of the second anniversary of the war, the New York Times published a lengthy article revealing that the Russian invasion of Ukraine was instigated by a systemic and widespread campaign of military intelligence aggression on the part of the United States. This article details longstanding CIA operations in Ukraine, in which the agency sponsored and built up the Ukrainian military intelligence agency, HUR, using it as a weapon of spying, assassination, and provocation directed against Russia for more than a decade. The Times writes, towards the end of 2021, according to a senior European official, Mr. Putin was weighing whether to launch his full-scale invasion when he met with the head of one of Russia's main spy services, who told him that the CIA, together with Britain's MI6, were controlling Ukraine and turning it into a beachhead for operations against Moscow. The Times report demonstrates that this Russian intelligence assessment was absolutely true. For more than a decade, dating back to 2014, the CIA was building up, training, and arming Ukrainian intelligence and paramilitary forces that were engaging in assassinations and other provocations against pro-Russian forces in eastern Ukraine, against Russian forces in Crimea, and across the border into Russia itself. In a critical passage, the Times writes, as the partnership deepened after 2016, the Ukrainians became impatient with what they considered Washington's undue caution and began staging assassinations and other lethal operations, which violated the terms the White House thought the Ukrainians had agreed to. Infuriated, officials in Washington threatened to cut off support, but they never did. In other words, Ukrainian paramilitary forces that were armed, funded, and led by the United States and NATO were systematically assassinating forces supporting closer relations with Russia. The newspaper's account begins with the maiden coup of February 2014. Maiden set the stage for a massive escalation of the CIA intervention, as detailed in the Times report. The intelligence agency played a central role in fueling conflict between Ukraine and Russia, first as a low-level war against pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine, and then as a full-scale war after the invasion in February 2022. The Times reports that a Ukrainian unit, the Fifth Directorate, was tasked with conducting assassinations, including one in 2016. The Times writes, a mysterious explosion in the Russian-occupied city of Donetsk in eastern Ukraine ripped through an elevator carrying a senior Russian separatist commander known as Motorola. The CIA soon learned that the assassins were members of the Fifth Directorate, the spy group that received CIA training. Ukraine's domestic intelligence agency had even handed out commemorative patches to those involved, each one stitched with the word lift, which is the British term for an elevator. The report goes on to describe another such operation involving a remotely fired rocket launcher. The CIA found its Ukrainian allies very useful in collecting vast amounts of data on Russian military intelligence activity, so much that the HUR itself couldn't process it and had to forward the raw data to CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. They estimate around 250 to 300,000 Russian military/intelligence messages were being collected each day, not just related to Ukraine, but concerning Russian intelligence activity all over the world. All these activities occurred well before the Russian invasion in 2022. The outbreak of full-scale war led to even more direct CIA engagement in Ukraine. According to the Times, within weeks, the CIA had returned to Kyiv and the agency sent in scores of new officers to help the Ukrainians. A senior U.S. official said of the CIA's sizable presence, are they pulling triggers? No. Are they helping with the targeting? Absolutely. In other words, the CIA was helping direct the war, making the U.S. government a full participant, a co-belligerent in a war with nuclear-armed Russia, despite Biden's claim that the U.S. was only aiding Ukraine from afar. And all this without the American people having the slightest say in the matter. The Times account also provides an inadvertent indictment of the American media. The newspaper writes, "The details of this intelligence partnership, many of which are being disclosed by the New York Times for the first time, have been a closely guarded secret for a decade." This admission means these secrets were closely guarded by the Times itself. The Times article is not so much an exposure as a controlled release of information. The two authors of the piece conducted more than 200 interviews with current and former officials in Ukraine, elsewhere in Europe, and in the U.S. This activity could hardly have taken place without the knowledge, permission, and encouragement of the CIA, as well as the Zelensky regime and Ukrainian intelligence. The exposure of a decade of CIA operations in Ukraine, clearly at the request of the agency itself, appears to be linked to the ongoing conflict within the U.S. ruling elite over what policy to adopt in that war. Congressional Republicans have blocked further military and financial aid to Ukraine, effectively declaring that the U.S. must cut its losses there and concentrate on the main enemy, China. By reporting the virtual control of the Ukrainian regime by the U.S. military, the Times is seeking to pressure Republicans to support the war funding. It's arguing that this money isn't going to a foreign government in a foreign war thousands of miles from U.S. borders, but instead to a subcontractor of American imperialism, waging an American war in which U.S. personnel are deeply and directly engaged. In doing so, the Times has revealed its own coverage of the Ukraine war over the past 2 years to have been nothing more than war propaganda, aimed at using a fraudulent narrative to dragoon the American public to support a predatory imperialist war of aggression aimed at subjugating and dismantling Russia. The end. Time for a good deep breath. What? They knew for 10 years that the CIA was provoking this conflict, and they chose to lie and say it was an unprovoked war to manipulate the American public into supporting a war that we probably would have felt very differently about if it were not for the propaganda. Yikes on bikes. I knew the legacy media was really, really bad, but this is worse than I thought. So what can you do? Question everything and keep stacking those beans, bullets, and band-aids. I hope you all got something from this. Again, there's a link to the article in the description. Sunshine Prepper out.
Well, what do you think, guys? I mean, it's no surprise whatsoever that in the past, the CIA has been involved in things. I mean, we've known it. I would say a few things. I love her advice on bullets, beans, and band-aids. It's funny. So I put out a bunch of shorts from my lives each week, and there was a short that had bullets, beans, and band-aids in it. And the person didn't have a sweet clue what I was talking about. I don't know if I actually responded. I probably should have, but I just thought that was such a well-known phrase. But again, we get in our inner circles, but I got a story coming up for you in just a moment about Russia, but what can you do? I mean, Becky and I, we in the evenings when we sit down and chill together, quite often we will share news stories to each other, and most of them revolve around our glorious leader, Trudeau, up here, and we just sent a bunch more money over there. So I guess advice being, you're going to pay taxes or you're going to go to jail, number one. However, almost any time you turn around, the government's trying to give away money for something. So in the words of someone else, you know, that we all know very well, it's okay to get some of your stolen tax dollars back. So I guess what I'm getting at is, if you ever look at it and think, should I go after this government grant or should I go after this tax break? The answer is yes, because they're going to take your money. You have no choice in it. The only choice you have in is trying to get some of it back. So, and we can't control what goes on a continent or an Atlantic Ocean away from us. So we can only control the life we're building here now, can't we? So, all right, next we have for you, we got a Russian heavy story this evening. It just is what it is. Willow and I, we don't talk ahead of time about what she's going to share with me. And that's okay. I like that. I like being surprised when I get her video in the morning and I play it unedited for you. And up until the last week, we basically both hit on the same stories. Now, this time was a little different, but did anybody catch? This is an article from Yahoo News. Yahoo! I didn't even know they still existed, but here we are. Just ignore that. So, Russia may have carried out its first direct action against the West. I mean, maybe, maybe not. Really, what this story is about is undersea infrastructure and, you know, deep sea fiber optic cables that go, well, obviously, if they go underwater, they have to start somewhere on either side, which means they start in the shallows, and that is where they are basically, I guess, able to be sabotaged somewhat easily. So this is the threat to undersea infrastructure, like every other threat just now, is increasing. That's a great news story headline to start with. This threat plus all other threats are increasing. Anyway, move on, Tim. Only a few weeks ago, the Houthis, I hope I got that right, and I probably didn't, so adeptly disrupting commercial shipping in the Bab el-Mandeb choke point, declared that they were going to add undersea disruption to their playbook. They said they would target the Submariner, it says submarine, but I think it's supposed to be Submariner cables that run through the Bab el-Mandeb between Asia and Europe. Hey, look who's in here. Jozik is a threat. Good to see you. Great to see you. We're going to talk about not Jozik, but being a threat later on. Now, as with undersea disruption in general, establishing what has happened is hard. For example, it isn't clear yet whether it was four separate cables belonging to four different companies, or just one that was severed. Internet monitoring from NetBlocks confirmed services in that city have been disrupted. Seacom likewise reports cable issues, but portions no blame. So in other words, this happened and they were, so basically this sucks and I hate it, but it's such low hanging fruit for you. They're basically saying, you know what? Screw you. We're going to cut your cables too. And man, oh man, I tell you. So that's what they're trying to do. And let's go down a little further. Cutting cables where they come ashore would be trivially easily. It might be done by a ship or a small fishing vessel dragging a hook. Can you imagine? So just a little hook running behind it. And it was, yeah, it just simple as that. I was trying to think, it kind of reminds me of like the helicopter when it's refueling or a jet when it's refueling. But these guys, I mean, anyway, we won't go there. It's just awful. So a small fishing vessel dragging a hook, and this could disrupt telecoms communications for an entire continent. From now on this particular incident, we need to be cautious. It's easy in situations like this for every glitch to start being pinned on it, and before you know, sabotage is confirmed. So that's really good advice, because with the telecom disruption that we had recently, sorry, you guys had, the one we had a year and a half ago here in Canada, almost instantly you go to, I go to, you know, kind of electronic terrorism. That's what I think. Some people might be like, EMP, but anyway, it's one of those things. So we're really quick to look at these and say, oh, it must be sabotage. Now, this just could be, you know how they say, it could be a coincidence that these folks said they were going to do it, and then something happened to the undersea cables. I doubt it. I think it's one of those things that, you know, they've probably figured out an easy way to do this. Simple as that. But let me share with you a couple of thoughts about this. So we talk about it. We've heard about EMPs or terrorists who want to take out the electric grid, right? I don't remember the exact numbers, but there's specific kind of substations around the U.S. that, you know, a strategic shot or two at each one would be enough to take down the whole grid. Now, same thing with these submarine underwater internet cables. We live, we breathe, we die by info technology at this point. And if, you know, some terrorist in a rowboat with a hook on it can end up cutting this cable in half, what do we think about that? I mean, it's scary. Well, okay. Well, have backup comms. Number one, that's the big one. Have some way. Now, okay, you're not going to be able to send carrier pigeons across the Atlantic Ocean and converse with friends and neighbors over there. However, losing comms like this could happen anywhere that we think. And if we lost it in our town, even just, I think about my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, Barrett and Amy, whom I've talked about many times. They're 10 miles north as the crow flies. That's far enough that it would be really nice to have comms. And I keep talking about it. And we have some things that we've worked on, but we haven't come up with a plan yet. But backup comms. So we all know Nate and Aaron from Homestead Ham Radio and Jason from, somebody remember his radio company. Anyway, support somebody from within our Radio Made Easy. There it is. Evan, I said Jason. I saw Jason's comment here earlier. We're going to talk about that in just a minute because, yeah, it's cool. So backup comms, that's the first solution. Doesn't mean it's not going to be a good day if somebody decides to cut some of these transcontinental cables, but again, it's a good start. Now, the fact that, well, I guess where I live in the prairies, losing an intersea cable isn't the end of the world, but the entire world is connected. So 2, 3, 4, you know, it would only take a few terrorists to get up a plan to go around and cut a bunch of these, and we could be in the dark ages for a while. It would suck. So have hard copies and backups. We talk about this all the time. I have an electronic copy of just about all of my pertinent data, but I got thinking about it. I don't believe I have a hard copy of a lot of that stuff at this point because it's so easy to just scan, put into a PDF and leave it there, which is fine, you know, unless you have no power and your computers die, but make backups and hard copies of everything because that's important. If you can't access Google Drive, what are you going to do, right? And beyond that, make plans. So this is something I've thought about quite a bit. And when I first moved out here to the prairies, I used to think, if shit ever goes sideways, how am I going to travel back to Nova Scotia? That's 5,000 kilometers, so like 3,500 miles. I wouldn't have. We never would have. I would have if my wife and kids were still out there, but we're not going back that way ever again at this point. So, however, if you have family that's miles or hundreds of miles away, it might be one of those things that you set up a plan. If comms ever go down, you can come here. This is how you get here. I'm just going to keep my eye out and make a plan and listen. You know, ham radio is great for it. If you're not into ham radio, just figure out plans ahead of time, whether it's routes of egress to get out or routes for your family to come to you. But that's it. You know, if you ever think that comms could be cut on a major scale, having a plan ahead of time will solve 95% of it. You're still going to be in the dark, but the folks that are coming to you, or if you're going to your folks, you know which way you're going and have contingencies too. All of that. We know that. All right, let's run back to the comments here. I saw one that I really wanted to touch on. Jason Reed, great to have you. He says, hey, Tim, how does one go about finding out where the audio clips from your podcast intro come from, particularly the My Family Must Survive bit? Definitely one of the best intros out there. Thank you, brother. I love it. I spent an entire day putting it together one time. I'm actually looking at upgrading it a little bit. I'd love to get somebody who could do some really cool animations so that I don't just have the static image with me. So My Family Must Survive is from Panic at Year Zero. It is my, I'm going to say, might be my favorite prepper movie of all time. I believe it's in either, it takes place either the late 50s or early 60s. And if you watch it, it sets the tone, it sets the pattern for all prepper porn. If somebody doesn't know what that means, it's really just, you know, stories about somebody who survives against all odds, that sort of thing. But it is the prototypical structure for prepper fiction going forward. Any of those books, any of that kind of, it's just awesome. The guy takes his family, they move out into the woods with an RV. So much fun. But if you've never seen it, it's a great black and white flick. And I also have a clip from it. Actually, there might be a couple other ones. So The Sky's Radioactive, that comes from that movie as well. And there's one that I play during a stinger that is Hold Your Gun Close, something like that. They all come from there. So appreciate you asking. I can make a whole list and fill you in. The last one where it talks about being in a bunker, that is Bert Gummer from the, what a night, having a hell of a time. Tremors, from Tremors. So if you've seen that, he's in there. I love it. One of them is from Twilight Zone, and I'll get the whole list for you going forward. Ellen Kerr says, kicking myself, I bought 2 gamma lids from TMU to try on our white buckets here in Oz. They don't fit. Oh, well, at least I didn't spend much and not on the good ones. Oh, poor Ellen. You know what? I should pick up some of those just so I can do a video and show people how bad they are. And Wisconsin Prepper, hey from Roving Blue, glad to see you on. Great to have you in here. Always appreciate it. Love seeing folks that I don't always see in the lives. And Mr. Chris Dixon is back from south of the south border. Spent some time in Mexico. So it's good to see you back, brother. All right, what do we got next for this one here? This one actually scared me a little bit this week. And I'm not, you know, I hate to be the harbinger of doom, and I'm not going to be, but this story just gives me the chills, guys. Now, this is a Canadian story, but I want you to hear what we're dealing with up here right now. This is a story from the Globe and Mail. Are you ready for this? This is some 1984 bullshit right here. Actually, scratch that. This is some Minority Report bullshit. Justice Minister defends house arrest power for people feared to commit a hate crime in the future. They haven't committed it yet, but they're at a high likelihood to do it. So they're looking at passing some new legislation here in Canada all about anti-hate speech. Well, I mean, I think that you're an absolute dickhead if you do hate speech. If you're speaking against somebody simply because you don't like them because of the color of their skin or the color of their hair or something like that, well, screw you. Like, but you certainly do not deserve house arrest for something like that. We all know. So here we go. You ready for this? This is quite the little ride. We won't land on this for too long, but I just wanted to share with you and give you some of my thoughts on how hopefully we'll deal with this as crazy Canucks, right? Justice Minister has defended a new power in the online harms bill to impose house arrest on someone who is feared. Impose house arrest on someone who is feared to commit a hate crime in the future, even if they have not done so already. I cannot believe this is not an episode of Black Mirror, folks. The person could be made to wear an electronic fucking tag. Sorry for the F-bomb there, but it needed to be said. If the Attorney General requests it or ordered by a judge to remain at home, the bill says. Mr. Vianney, who is the Attorney General as well as Justice Minister, said it's important that any peace bond be calibrated carefully, saying it would have to meet a high threshold to apply. Yes. Here's the question. Whose threshold does it be? It could prove to be very, very important to restrain the behavior of someone with a track record of hateful behavior who may be targeting certain people or groups. Here comes the best part of the entire thing. If there's a genuine fear of escalation, then an individual, I get that, or group could come forward and seek a peace bond against them to prevent them from doing certain things. A group. To me, this sounds like the squeaky wheel gets the grease again, because if you speak out, for instance, like Jordan Peterson right at the moment, you speak out and say, I'm not going to handle this pronoun, whatever. If that's where you're at with things, all it takes is for a small group to get pissed off at you and approach the justice minister or take you to court and say, guess what? You just lost your livelihood. Plus, you get to be electronically tracked and you might even go to jail. It gets better. The peace bond could have conditions that include not being close to a synagogue or a mosque, he said. It could also lead to restrictions on internet usage and behavior that would help to de-radicalize. Oh my God. That would help to de-radicalize people who are learning things online and acting out in the real world violently, sometimes fatally. Yes, bad shit happens. Yes, people learn bad shit on the internet. There's a lot of bad stuff out there, but it's not about the bad stuff. This is much higher level, he said. Bill C-63 is designed to curb the proliferation of hate online, but it also establishes a new hate crime offense, which could carry a maximum penalty of life imprisonment. I'm not making it up. Mr. Vianney said the hate crime offense would only be applied if coupled with another crime, and the life sentence would only apply in the most serious of cases, not, for example, for mischief to a garage door, at least not for the moment. There we are. That is what I woke up to the other day. So, this is a law against hate speech. The term hate speech has a very fluid definition that tends to change by the week, by the month, by the year, whatever the issue du jour happens to be. It's really worth knowing what the powers that be define the term hate speech. This is what scares me because, again, we talked about it last week with AI, and when they talk about it, putting in certain safeguards. Well, who decides what the standards are? Who decides what the safeguards are? And it's fine as long as it's, no, it's not actually fine, but I'm going to do the imaginary fine here. It's fine as long as the person implementing the safeguards agrees with your personal point of view about life. But if they happen to diverge from where you stand, all of a sudden you were the friend and now you're the enemy. Yeah. The problem, once again, and I talk about this, is, you know, the little kid getting ready to hit the free kick or the penalty kick into the soccer net, but somebody keeps standing up and running back and forth with the soccer net. They keep moving the damn goal posts, Tim. Now, here's the deal. This has not passed yet, but between the Liberals and the NDP up here, there is a strong possibility that it will. It took them 2 years, but they passed the handgun ban up here, and we know where that ended up, right? So I guess my first thing would be, for any of us, it doesn't. And here's the thing. This is the thing that pisses me off, is people don't realize the fact that once you get put on a list, you're stuck there. And again, with the goalpost moving, you could be friends of the government today and enemies of the government tomorrow. And that's what really bugs me. So I guess what I would say is be really careful what a person puts on the internet. We tell our daughters that all the time. They have friends who do stupid things and put stupid things on the internet. And I tell them, I'm like, this is for life. It does not matter. All it takes is one person to take a screenshot or somebody to go back through a database and absolutely ruin your life, right? So what would I say? What is good prepping advice? You know, what do we say? The number one rule of prepping is to stay alive. And the number two rule of prepping is to stay out of jail, right? We just want to be left alone. Everybody wants to be left alone. But the problem is they just keep pushing and pushing and pushing. So here we are. Just be careful what you put online. That's simple. Even a lot of the things that an average North American believes that aren't hate speech could absolutely get you in trouble for it. So think twice before you post a meme. Think twice before you send a private message. If you need to communicate with folks on sensitive subjects, and I don't mean hateful subjects, because that has no place here. It really doesn't. At least, you know, I don't know. Where do you even go? It's such a fluid term, right? But use encrypted technology. And even that, like, I mean, Telegram we used to think was, but it's really not. Signal is okay. I don't know. I'm not even sure where you go with it. But honestly, just keep your nose clean, folks. Don't share the meme you think you should. Don't get yourself on lists. Don't attract attention, because once you've attracted attention, you're hooped for a long time. Bad things can happen. And yeah, so there you go. I hope, yeah, it just, that's a really shitty situation to hear about. I felt just as bad when I heard this as the day I heard they were banning handguns up here. All right, this is the next one for you. This one's a funny one. These stories this week, you can't make this shit up. So you ready? This comes from thetie.com, T-Y-E-E. If anybody heard last week about the $50 minimum wage that somebody in California thought would be a great idea, well, how about this one right here? Let's set a maximum wage for the rich. Now, remember, this is not me speaking, folks. This is me reading an article. An absolutely insane article. This one here. According to libertarianism, yep, that's a name. No one deserves to be a billionaire, not even Taylor Swift. Boy, if you don't think this article, or at least the thumbnail, was posted simply to get eyeballs onto it, you don't know what you're talking about, I guess. Here we go. This is an article about a book. The book is called Libertarianism, The Case Against Extreme Wealth, from Ingrid Robbins, 2024. Eat the rich might be an attractive idea to some, but let's face it, folks, the rich are just too few to go around. Whew, what a great opening line to an article. Their wealth, on the other hand, offers plenty for all. Does anyone else see a problem with that? Because I know I do. Their wealth, on the other hand, offers plenty for all. Where in the hell do you get off saying that you, or whomever this, the author or the author of the article, Where do they get off thinking they deserve even one penny of someone else's money? But it gets better. Instead of fretting about a minimum wage for the poor, let's set a maximum wage for the rich. Just going to put it out there. If you want to collapse an economy, this right here, folks, is what you do. And it will happen fucking fast. Wow. Call it $1 million a year, salary or investment income, with any excess income going straight into tax revenues. Yozik from the community says, Atlas shrugged. Bing, 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 bing. That's exactly what I thought of when I heard this. There is some doublespeak in this article, I will tell you. The idea of limitarianism, as Robbins defines it, there's the problem as well. Strong Roots Resources is sadly not satire. Nope, it's not. The idea of limitarianism, as defined by the author of Limitarianism, funny, is that no one needs or deserves more than enough income to live comfortably and securely. All animals are equal. Some animals are more equal than others. At present, she estimates, I'm not sure why she gets to pick it, but here we are. At present, she estimates the local equivalent of $1 million, pounds or euros should be plenty. Moreover, those making less than $1 million would still live quite well thanks to social programs funded by taxing the super rich. Well, they ain't going to be super rich for very long now, are they? I don't see how you look at this and think this works. I don't get it. I mean, all of a sudden, you can only make $1 million. Anything over $1 million, you don't get to keep. Well, guess what? You're going to stop working at $1 million, or you're going to figure out other ways to get around it now, aren't you? This one has got to be one of the dumbest arguments I have ever heard in my life. Put Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk on a desert island. They'll be lucky to survive. But put them in North America in the 1990s when the taxpayer-funded internet had just gone commercial, and they'll become billionaires. Well, you want to know what's funny? 300 million people. I looked it up. In 1995, there were 300 million people in North America between the U.S. and Canada. But only two of them, well, maybe a few, but Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk were able to take advantage of the economic climate at that time and government incentives to become multi-billionaires. I don't know. You know, you put Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk on a desert island with a whole bunch of other people, and I bet you they'll get them to work together, figure out a way to reward them, and get their asses off the island. Jeez. For example, an international tech corporation may make huge profits in Canada, but pay nothing if it declares those profits in Bermuda, which has no corporate tax. Do you not see the problem here? If you try to tax people and take all of their money that way, they'll just find ways around it, like international tax corporation making huge profits in Canada and moving them to Bermuda. Similarly, Robin says the bankers who caused the 2008 financial crash should not have been rescued by the taxpayers to the tune of $500 billion. Finally, something we agree on. I'm really happy about this. I'm like, wow, she finally agrees that I don't agree with bank bailouts either. As the saying goes, she observes, socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor. Okay, she was doing good on the first line, but the second line really pissed me off. Socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor. I do believe you are honking up a big wad of socialism for everybody here, and it's not going to cut it. So, I mean, this is not going to fly. It's just not. But if anybody wants to see a quick way to get rid of exactly what Yozik says here in the comments, what happens when the super rich innovators quit and disappear? Because if you take away any incentive for them to do well, I know folks say, well, you know, if people don't have to work, they'll do what they want and they'll do great things. Maybe some will, but lots of them won't. So what do you think about that? Like I said, if you want to see a collapse coming quickly, this is it right here. But what do I take from this article? The first thing I take from this article is start a damn business. Because if you notice, those folks that were rich were entrepreneurs because they had the flexibility to do what they needed to do to make the life they wanted to live. Start business, start business, start business, start a business. And if you can't start a business, start a side hustle. At least you have a little bit of a backup, and that's okay. What else do I think? Store cash, durable goods, and precious metals. All of those things, tangible assets, things that things that are between me, you, and the fence post over there, things that you have that nobody else knows you have, a way to hold on to your riches no matter what, a way to barter with other folks in case somebody decides to do some bullshit like this. Develop an alternative economy with an alternative community, something that my good friend Nicole Sauce talks about all the time. Have folks that you trust. Build relationships ahead of time. Barter with them ahead of time. Do value for value exchange ahead of time so that you don't have to deal with this kind of shit. Oh, how does this lady decide? How does anyone decide what someone deserves or needs to live comfortably? Your definition, my definition, her definition are all different. So why does she get to be the arbiter of the monetary system? I don't know. I don't care. Whew. The average working person, here's the thing. When she talks about this, the average working person will not need to work anymore. Here's the thing. They're not just not working, but you're taking them out of contributing to the economy. So the fact that they don't need to make money is neither here nor there, but the fact that they're not in the economy making things happen, making goods, building products, offering services, that's when you really see a collapse, and that's when things will go sideways. So, like I said, store cash, store durable goods, store precious metals, develop an alternative economy with an alternative community. Folks that you vet ahead of time, folks that you know you can trust now, so that if shit ever did go sideways down the road, you don't have to worry. I mean, we're always going to worry, but you don't really have to worry. So what do we got here? Let's take a look at what the delinquents have to say over in the comments. We got Strong Roots Resources says, sadly, not satire right there. And Strong Roots Resources says, sounds hateful toward the rich. It's okay to be hateful toward the rich. You just can't be hateful toward the poor. If you do that, then you're going to be on house arrest. Yozik says, what happens when the super rich innovators quit and disappear? And Hardway Homestead, Alaska says, Jim Rohn said, if all the money was split to everyone, the money would just end up back in the hands of the rich. Bam. And that's exactly where it is. So I grew up listening to talk radio. I've mentioned this many times. And Tom Young, God rest his soul, was just awesome. I used to listen to him. He was over in St. John, New Brunswick. He had a theory. I think it was 18 months, but it might have been 3 years. It didn't really, the time frame didn't matter. But he would have people on who would say, we just need to tax the rich and redistribution of the wealth and everything will be fine. He used to claim uphill and down that if you did that, if you took every dollar in the world and split it up equally amongst every folk out there, within a couple to 3 years, the money would be back just where it was. And you only need to look at the vast majority of lottery winners to know that's the exact truth. Chris Dixon wins the night for the comments. He says, if the poor believed in and worked capitalism, they wouldn't be poor. 100%. Look at California and how those rich and major businesses left continue to leave. Yep. Sylvester Stallone, we talked about last week. He is leaving California for Florida. Jeff Bezos recently moved, I believe, to Florida and saved billions of dollars. Wah, wah. It is what it is, right? There you go. Yeah, so here's a slightly more lighthearted story to finish up, Stranger Than Fiction. And I didn't play my snazzy little intro for you, but that's okay. Here it is. This one comes from CTV News. And I thought this was kind of a cool little... I mean, it sucks that people have to do this kind of thing, but here's the article. Patients trade their time for free dental work at University of Alberta. And the reason I wanted to share this is because there's solutions to problems all the time. You just sometimes have to get a little bit creative. And in this instance, this is one of those. It's like there's a massage school where people go to learn to be masseuse or masseuses or whatever the top proper term is in Edmonton. And you can go and it's like dirt cheap, but you have to know, it's like going to a barber college. You might come away missing an ear. Not really, but. So the University of Alberta School of Dentistry held its IV conscious sedation program, offering free services for patients willing to help dentists practice the procedures. Now, you're going to be asleep anyway, but the program accepts around 100 patients a year and is geared toward people who require sedation in the dentist chair. The six dentists at the clinic Saturday perform services like extractions, cleanings, and fillings, all with patients resting comfortably. Number one, what a great reason to take care of your teeth. What a great reason to get routine dental care done when and if you can, because, man, nothing can mess you up. A bad back, sore feet, or a mouthful of teeth that are in bad shape. You're gonna be a hurting unit. So take care of your teeth. But this is kind of neat. This is a way that if you had to and you couldn't afford some dentist work, it's a good little value for value exchange. You give your time and you get to act as, I hate to use the word guinea pig, but a subject, and the dentist gives you the service for free. They said the program not only helps patients get the care they need, but it also helps dentists build specialized skills to take back to their practices and communities. Times are tough, and when you have the opportunity to make a program that's a win-win, that's obviously a great thing. So here's where kind of the education system, the economy, and the everyday average Joe all come together and work. Didn't necessarily need government to do this, and I liked it. So I wanted to share that with you. It's just one of those things. Like I said, sometimes folks can't afford to get a tooth pulled or dental work, and this is an option to take a look at. So there you go. All right, next, can't forget our sponsor this week. And if anybody's heard, Joel Riles, Fortress Canine, give him a listen over on the Protection Dog Podcast. They have crazy things going on. They are in the middle of picking up their entire facility, not the buildings, but all the dogs and everything they do, and they're moving from Florida to Ohio. It's going to be a big deal, and it's going to be quite the story. So give him a follow, because Joel took a chance on this podcast way back when it was just me sitting in my basement talking to myself. Oh, wait, I'm still just in my basement talking to myself. Give Joel some love, folks. He supported the podcast, and I try my damnedest to support him. So there you go. All right. So that was Stranger Than Fiction.
The time has come for Stranger Than Fiction.
All right. What do we got next? We got Finding Freedom for you. This is decided to do something different this week. So I try to do something that's designed around building the life you want to live, because I think that's really important. And one of the big things for me, of course, is entrepreneurship. And there was an echo there. Thank you, Yozik. That's must be in my microphone. Appreciate it. Good. All right. So here we go. I got a couple of memes to share. I know, memes, really? So I'll do my best to describe these for the audio too. But I shared a couple of these in the Telegram group this week, and they were too good not to share with all the folks on the live as well. So one of my favorite content creators, and I've shared him in the content creator spotlight before, is Film Booth. He gives out some of the best advice for growing a content creation channel. However, the stuff could be quickly applied to absolutely anything. So you got a meme here, and you got two big blue balls. Yep, that's right, that say results. And you got one with a straight line, and below it, it says with goal. And you got one at the bottom with whole bunch of squiggly lines that never make it to the results, and that says without goal. It's a great illustration of what we talk about. But here's the best part. He says, if you want to make it as a full-time creator, pick one big goal and focus on it. I'm really starting to learn this, and it's taken me 4 years to get there. Then, and you could replace full-time content creator with business person, whatever it happens to be. Then for every decision you make, ask yourself, will this help me hit my main goal? If the answer is no, don't do it. If the answer is maybe, don't do it. If the answer is yes, then hell yeah, do it. There are so many distractions stopping you from hitting your goals. Get clear on what you want from your channel or your business, and you'll find decision-making and results that transform what you're doing. I don't even know if I can elaborate on that. That is perfect, because we get nailed down, bogged down with all the busy work. We try, and I share this all the time. I talk about the spaghetti method when you're first getting started, and that's okay, because you have to try a bunch of things to find the things that work. But once you find the thing that works for you, that's when you need to go arrow straight with blinders on and go for the goal. And maybe is a no. No is a no. Yes is a go for it. And then the other one I got for you, this one came from, I think it was on Twitter. The dude's handle is crazy. His name is Steven Strangles People. And I shared this in Telegram, but folks need to hear this. The hellscape of modern life ends when you find the nexus of, and I guess that's where the three things join. One, what makes you money? 2, what adds value for others, and 3, what gives you a sense of purpose. Find these 3 and escape the soul-sucking grind that everyone is trapped in. Wishing you all the best. I wish that every, you know, soon-to-be adult in whatever the next generation coming up is could take that and internalize that to no end. And if any of us can do that, you will have a life that you love. Because if this doesn't sound like my mantra, you can make money and help people. They're not mutually exclusive. What does this guy say? A sense of purpose, value for others, and makes you money. If that's not the definition of anarcho-capitalism, I don't know what is. Because when you find something that both makes you money, adds value for others, and gives you a sense of purpose, man, there is no stopping you. And speaking of that purpose, I say all the time, Nicole asked me the other night, you know, why did you start content creation? I said, because I wanted to start another business. I want to help people and I want to make money. And, you know, when I get a good month in YouTube and the money comes in, I'm quite happy. But there is nothing that I love more than hearing from other people for the things that they've done that for whatever reason, they feel like I've played a small part in it. And I got a gift in the mail the other day, and it was from a fellow delinquent. I'm not going to share what it was because it was special enough that it brought, you know, it brought a couple of tears to my eyes. Let's put it that way. But it was sent to me from a good friend that I really appreciate. And basically it was said, you deserve this because of all the help you've given me. And I didn't even see it like I'd helped a whole lot. But that is the shit that jazzes me up. That is where I find the intersection of value for others and gives me a sense of purpose. And that's what you need to do, folks. Get out there and figure out something that'll make you money, adds value for others, and gives you a sense of purpose. Perfect. That is perfection. I don't think a feller ever needs to share another meme because that does it right there. All right, what do we got next? Next we have, and let's shout out, Jewel says, sorry she's late. Hey, we don't mind. We're always here. And the replay's here for everybody. But Jules, we need to shout out to her because I'm pretty sure you just bought land. Good for you. I love to hear that. I love seeing people succeed. So keep it up. I want to hear all the cool things you're going to do with it. All right. So next we have, so there's not a whole lot, but our next segment is.
He's dead. They're all dead. Everyone, you and I are in a dead world. And I'm glad it's dead.
Coming up next is Workshop Wasteland. All right. So we have got, there's only a couple little stories here. And for those who don't know, the Workshop Wasteland is where we take a quick look at all things dystopian and post-apocalyptic in books, movies, music. And actually, I started putting together a soundtrack for The Collapse or a soundtrack. Anyway, a whole bunch of good kind of post-apocalyptic songs this week. So I'm going to share that playlist with you here in the next week or two once I get it all done. And there was an echo again, and I muted my microphone. So it's got to be these speakers. I apologize, guys. You know, no excuses, but I tell you all the time, 1% better every single week. And so I want the show to be the best damn show it can be. And for me, that means some really cool audio stingers in the middle. And it also means that growing pains every time I make a change. So I appreciate everybody who's always patient with what I do. And I love doing this stuff. And I'll always work out the kinks. And I want other people to feel free to experiment with stuff like that as well. If you're out creating something or doing something, then it's okay to fail. And I don't mean fail. I just mean it's okay to get a little egg on your face and fix things up once in a blue moon, right? So it's going to get better. We'll figure it out. I think I finally figured it out that it's these damn little speakers. I got to turn them way down. I think that's where it's at. And if it isn't, please tell me. And I apologize to anybody listening in the audio. There we are. Okay. So first story of the week from the Workshop Wasteland is season 1 of The Walking Dead. What? That happened 15 years ago. Yeah, I know. The Walking Dead's been on life support since, I don't know, since Negan showed up, stood over, I guess, Glenn with a baseball bat in that moonlight with a little bit of mist. And it's really never been the same since. But here we are. Apparently, and I have not watched this, so this is not an endorsement on my part, but season 1 of The Walking Dead, the ones Who Live is out. I don't think Becky's seen it yet. I probably won't watch it, but I wanted to share with you guys. The reviews on it have been great. 29 reviews, 89% from critics, and 95% from folks who liked the show. I think that season one of The Walking Dead was one of the most perfect post-apocalyptic journeys we've ever been on. And even the first three or four kind of seasons going into maybe season five were good. So if anybody's interested and if anybody watches it, give me a holler on what you thought, because I just wanted to throw it out there to let you know. Like I said, it's been a quiet news week for post-apocalyptic media. But here's one that's kind of sad. And if you guys have ever mentioned, anybody out there like the TV show Jericho? Because I love that show. That was probably the best TV show on over-the-air cable about the apocalypse that's ever been put out there. It just goes to show that you can make a really good collapse drama and allow it to be PG. I think it's great. So anyway, the actor, I didn't realize he was Canadian, Kenneth Mitchell, he played Eric Green on the show, passed away this week at 49. He's been suffering from Lou Gehrig's disease, or ALS, for a long time. But if you've ever seen the show, he plays not the greatest character in the world. He's cheating on his wife. They have a baby coming up. He's kind of like the spoiled prodigal son. He's a great actor in the show, and I loved his part in it. And it's a shame to see him go so young. So I wanted to shout him out. I guess we'll dedicate the show to him, because Becky and I have rewatched Jericho as many times as any other show we've ever watched. And, you know, thanks, Kenneth, for the entertainment. It was great. All right, next. This one here. Anybody see the trailer for Borderlands? It is crazy. I've never played Borderlands, the video game, but this is a TV show coming up. And you got Kate Blanchett with fire red hair. You have a garbage robot voiced by Jack Black. You have a fan base that absolutely hated the first trailer and says it looks like shit. So I don't know what to believe, but if anybody's into, again, post-apocalyptic kind of video games, you got yet another cinematic adaptation that may float or it may sink. And finally, this one here cracked me the hell up this week, guys. I love Starship Troopers. If you haven't seen it, give yourself, make some time to watch it. I didn't watch it originally, or actually I did. I remember watching it in high school and I didn't get it. I didn't realize it was satire. I thought it was just an absolute cheesy mess. And I will tell you, watching it on a 25-inch floor model CRT TV, I still knew the effects were cheesy back then. So that tells you something. However, the reason I'm talking about Starship Troopers is it turns out it's one of the best satire kind of shows out there. The whole rah, rah, rah patriotism, and they make fun of it like crazy. Well, there's this new video game coming out called Helldivers 2 Report for Duty, Report for Duty trailer. I can't show you here. You know I can't, because copyright reasons. But do yourself a favor. All the links of the entire, everything I show you tonight is in the show notes. But do yourself a favor and watch the like minute and 47 second trailer. It's hilarious. And it reminds me exactly of those propaganda videos from Starship Troopers. So give yourself a chance and check it out, because it was really neat. All right, let's slide on in.
Now you stay in the back room. You stay in the back room.
And you keep your gun handy.
Our country is still full of thieving, murdering
patriots.
Get ready for I read it on the internet. All right, there we go. How was that one? We got I Read It on the Internet. And this is where we go and we take some of the best, or I go through and I find the top trending story or stories from Reddit, our preppers, every week, and I share you some stuff. And typically there's some really good kind of gems of stuff. And there was still an echo. Okay, well, we'll figure it out. So it can't be anything internal either. So damn it. I thought I had it that time, folks. See, this is what we do, experiment in real time. And if anybody loves experimentation, that sounds really weird, Tim. I did my very first vertical live stream the other night on YouTube, and it plays in the shorts feed mostly. Folks seem to really enjoy it. I kind of took the stuff that hit the cutting room floor from this week in prepping, and I went on and we did... just kind of stories I didn't touch on. And then we did a kind of an open-ended conversation, and Wired Edge Workshop, if you're still in here, they came across from there, but it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed chatting, just kind of more laid back. So there will be more of those vertical live streams. I'm never going to really tell you when they happen. They're just going to pop up when they do. All right, so this week's, I read it on the internet, Observations and Lessons Learned from 20-ish Years of Prepping. This is from Abren01, user Abren01. I always see an abundance of posts on here asking for beginner advice and gear recommendations. Here's a brain dump of some of the things I've discovered and lessons I've learned over many years of casual prepping. Take this as one person's point of view. It's some really good stuff, though. I stumbled upon a request from our local fire department searching for new members. It's a part-time department crowded on nights and weekends by crewed on nights and weekends by volunteers. I called and I talked to their chief, who brought me on board readily. That's usually the way with small town volunteer organizations. They're always looking for fresh meat or warm blood or whatever. The department paid for my EMT training, my firefighter training, and in exchange for a commitment to serve for a certain amount of time. I had no idea how beneficial this would be. It opened a huge amount of possibilities and introduced me to a large network of highly trained people. I met new people, made new friends, and learned an incredible amount of new skills. That is a win-win situation. If you have some time, volunteer for one of those organizations. They're going to pay for your training. You're going to meet special people, and I mean special in a good sense, folks who know their shit, who can introduce you to other people. And imagine the skills. Like, oh my goodness. Yeah, I love that. What great advice. Now, not everybody can run out and volunteer for the local fire department, but if you can, go for it. I like this one too. Over many years, I've also revamped my go bag and removed all the nonsensical things. Don't we love our shit? Hey, that I thought were cool and important at the time, realizing that most common situations I'll face are a car wreck, a flat tire, or a breakdown. I carry gear aimed at those eventualities: a quality 12-volt compressor, a nice flat fixing kit, a decent hazard warning sign, and some road flares. I've got a good set of jumper cables, a socket set. I also built a separate trauma bag that stays with me in the car. I do still keep a small amount of food and some water bottles on the outside chance I'll need them someday. Again, what a great vehicle, practical prepping kit. I like hearing people who have been there, done it. They've gone through the, oh, I'm scared shitless, Y2K or 2008 or 2012 or whatever it happens to be. What do I throw money at to make me feel better? And then they're like, whoa, calm down, because we love our gear. But it's kind of neat to see these guys who are deciding, yeah, you know what? I can really pare it down. It's like the people who have hiked for years and they carry a quarter of the gear that everybody else does because they know what they actually need. I still prep at home as well, but in more practical ways than my younger self would have chosen. I still have my ham radio license. I still hoard ammo. Good man. We still keep extra food on hand, but I've learned that financial prepping is far more useful on a daily basis. I'm going to read that a second time, folks. Financial prepping is far more useful on a daily basis. And this is coming from a person who made a mess of our finances for a lot of years. And yep, it is. It took 12 years, but my wife and I buckled down hard on spending and paid off all our debt. We saved up 6 months of expenses and set aside a fund to purchase a decent used vehicle if one of ours suffers a failure. Having the correct insurance coverage is also extremely important. So again, practical financial prepping advice. I couldn't have said it any better myself, but you can tell this person's been around the block a bit. They realize that, you know, you can get lost in the craziness that is prepping, but when it come down to it, this person volunteered at the volunteer fire department, picked up a ton of skills, met a lot of great people. So they built their skills, they built community, they made practical bags for the things they actually need, not necessarily, you know, adventures in their head. And then lastly, taking care of their financial preps. I love it. I couldn't have said it better myself. And I definitely couldn't, for sure. And the other one, this is just a small one. This is a really good one. This comes from 45 Long Slide. Hard question. If you take medication every day that literally keeps you alive, is it pointless to prep? It's kind of a sad title, to be honest. But so they said organ rejection drugs, for example, only can be prescribed for at most 90 days. Shelf life of a drug is about 3 years after production. At least that's what this person's saying. Is it worth it to stockpile guns, ammo, food supplies, tools, etc.? If the shit hit the fan, a nuclear bomb, whatever, if it happened, the near the end of your 90 days of prescriptions, you only get a few weeks. Best case scenario is that shit hits the fan at the beginning of a 3-month refill. So I get it. I'm going to guess this person's probably fairly new into prepping. I'm thinking, because when you look at that and you look, okay, well, what are the most likely scenarios that could happen to this poor individual? None of them are a total collapse, a nuclear bomb, anything like that. They are, I run out of money, I lose my job, I lose my health insurance. All of those things would be personal apocalypse that they need to prep for. So down here, this was one of the, and we've heard this one before. I've heard this from Doc Bones. Nurse Amy says, I take anti-rejection meds, and I have found that with mail order prescriptions, there is a window that you can order in. The window extends to both sides the actual date that your medications would be used up. Over the course of 4 years and diligent ordering, I now have a year's worth of rejection meds stacked up. You have to make sure you rotate them, but the medication is still fine. Perfect. So you have, and I've done this with my blood pressure pills and my other pills. It's just, it's a good thing to do. Figure out what your refill window is. For me, it's 15 days at the local drugstore here. So I can go in 15 days early. I can fill a 90-day prescription. I get 2 extra weeks, and you keep doing that every 90 days. And it doesn't take very long to build up a really good stockpile of what you need. So there you go, folks. I love that. Again, I will warn you about Reddit. If you go over to Our Preppers and you think, I'm going to go over there and become part of the community, well, you might want to, but have some thick skin. They're definitely gatekeepers over there. They have a very, there is a, you know how, I don't know if you've ever seen the memes, typical Redditor. Well, there is definitely a typical prepper Redditor. I would say for the most part, they definitely fall toward the practical preparedness, but they're very much like, this is how I am and this is how it's going to be. And anyway, it's definitely worth checking out. Let's leave it at that. All right. Next, we have the Cookbook of the Collapse. And this was a fun one. This actually came from my mother-in-law this week. She sent me a text and she said, hey, Tim, here is a recipe for your Cookbook of the Collapse. I didn't realize she listened to my episodes very often, but it was kind of nice to hear that. So, so this one is what we call, and we have done this before, my wife and I, Becky and I and the kids, when we've gone camping, it's called a hobo dinner, or I guess the politically correct term is the burger foil packs, AKA the hobo dinner. I like hobo dinner. I think it's a neat sounding name. So what do? Well, you take a great big piece of tin foil. You take a raw hamburger patty, season it with salt and pepper. Then you put veggies in there. So you're going to cut up some potatoes. We always liked a couple slices of onion because it gives it flavor, a bunch of potatoes and a bunch of carrots. Put a big dollop of butter in there, wrap it up just like a baked potato, and you throw it in the coals. You wrap it in foil, bake it in the campfire, grill it to cook it on the grill, whatever. But for us, it was one of the best things to do. Just put it right in the campfire. Kids loved it. It's just, it's so much fun. So then you, cook it for 10 minutes, flip it over, cook it for 10 or 15. If you're going to do it in the oven, we've done it in the oven before just because we were home and wanted to do it. Heat it on 400 and cook for 10, then turn for an additional 15. When you take it out, don't grab the damn tinfoil right away. But it is just such a simple, wholesome, filling meal that you can have outdoors that I just love to have. So anyway, that's called a hobo dinner. If you guys haven't heard of it before, give it a shot. It's simple, easy, one of the best things you can cook on an outdoor fire. And again, I'm begging you, not really, but send me some submissions for Cookbook of the Collapse. I love doing this and I want to get some stuff from everybody else out there. We've had 2 submissions from the community so far, I guess 3 if you include my mother-in-law. But I have more recipes of my own, but I want this to be a community effort because when we hit 100 recipes, we're going to put it together in a book called Cookbook of the Collapse. We're going to print it. We're going to sell it. We're going to make it available. That'd be a lot of fun. All right, let's look at the comments. Chris Dixon says, don't put up with any crap. If you know your stuff, you'll find your people. 100%, brother. Love it. All right. Next is This Week in the Workshop. And this is where I take a look at things I did this week. And I share what I've done, both for inspiration and for accountability. So here we go. They're easy. They're good ones. But I don't know if I mentioned this yet, and I probably should, but I didn't have it in my notes. My 5'11 boots that I've been wearing for about 4 months since I came back from down south, loved them. Had them broken in. They were beautiful. One of the zippers went on them the other day, and I called the company, and not 5'11. I bought them from a reseller, and I missed the return window, at least in their convoluted logic, by less than 2 weeks, and they completely shut me down. So I'm going to reach out to 5'11 because, according to their website, their boots have a lifetime warranty. Now, I'm not going to send something back that's beat to rat shit, but less than 4 months, I've been wearing these. That zipper was like brand new, and it just completely gave up the ghost. So I hope 5'11 does the right thing, because I had already ordered another pair of boots. I wanted a brown pair as well, and they showed up. I picked them up yesterday. But I'm just going to see if they'll warranty them, if anybody has any luck with them. I do. Oh, okay. So Byron Roberts says, if you like side zipper boots, Bates makes good ones as well. I'm going to give them a shot because I'm going to give 5'11 a chance to make it right. Because in the last 6 months, I've bought 3 backpacks, 2 belts, and 2 pairs of boots from 5'11. Now, I'm sure people have spent a lot more money with them than I have, but it's probably damn close to $1,000. And I know this was an authorized reseller, but they wouldn't stand by their product. So I really hope 5'11 does. And I'm not trashing 5'11 yet. I'm just saying that them boots should have lasted a hell of a lot longer than a little less than 4 months. All right. Well, what did I do this week? Ton of assembly at the daycare. We are finally hitting our stride up there. I'm pretty excited. We actually haven't done anything there this week because there wasn't really anything to do. I go up next week for some final touches. We got our health and our building inspection done there, folks. So I share, build the life you want to live. And we've been doing that. It's been stressful. It's been tiring. It's been exciting. It's been exhilarating. And holy crap, I feel like Becky and I both said it. We feel like we could just sleep. And yeah, I don't. Anyway, so we're getting closer. We got Becky. Sorry, I say we. I didn't have anything to do with the paperwork. Becky got all the paperwork filed with the province, and we're just waiting on her final licensing inspection. Theseus said the other day how Becky was a saint because she has the patience to deal with this stuff, and she absolutely is. But I want to tell you something. I was talking to Becky last night, and you will appreciate this. So, well, yeah, because government red tape. We filed everything. So we've got Becky sent every piece of paper that needs to go in. And I thought, okay, so it's the final person that has to look at it. Here's how it goes. So it goes to a licensing officer who oversees administration. That person looks over all your paperwork and says, yep, it's all good. And then they send it to their supervisor. Their supervisor looks it over again and says, yep, it's all the paperwork is there. Stamp. And then from there, they send it to another licensing officer who's in charge of doing on-site inspections. That person looks at the paperwork and says, yep, it's all there. They come out, they do an inspection, they then go back and file that inspection with their supervisor, who then finally, after 4 hands it's passed through, issues you a license. So there you go. That is, anyway, it is, you know, if we want to play the game, we have to play by the rules. I'm okay with it. It's just funny how it works. Only did 2 loads in the freeze dryer this week, guys. Again, accountability. But all I did was breakfast sausage and stewing beef. I've actually got a mix, and I know they don't recommend this, but I got pineapple on the top and chicken pot pie on the bottom. So we'll see. I really hope it's done before we have to leave tomorrow, because we're going to be gone for a 3-day trip to the city for yet another volleyball tournament. And speaking of that, I did a basketball tournament with the girls as well. So we're talking about boots. Byron Roberts says, I've worn, talking about the side zippers, Bates boots. I'm going to check them out. Worn them for quite a few years. Still have 3 pairs I rotate through. And my good brother, Lone Canadian, said, I've been wearing 5'11 for years now and never had an issue. Just sorry to hear your experience wasn't the same. I'm not sure if this is necessarily the case, but I just kind of Googled. This is what I used to do, is just throw in like 5'11 warranty and stuff. And I found a forum online of paramedics who wear 5'11 gear. And just about everybody said that the last year to 2 years, some of their quality's gone downhill. I hope that's not permanent, because I love their gear. It looks good. It feels good. It seems like it wears well. So there you go. So I feel naked this week. I know I shouldn't go outside my boxers, but I do. But no, seriously, I had earlier this week, you know, I've got a new truck coming. I had to strip my entire truck down and take everything out of it so that I'm ready to swap my truck out. And I went for a 10-hour round trip to the border and back yesterday without any of my gear, and I felt kind of lost. I had to take my tonneau cover off. I had to take my full-size spare off. I took my light bar off. The truck is so sad. All my good gear that's normally in it, I packed it all up so I wouldn't lose it. And Jules, you're very welcome. She said, not a visual I wanted, but thanks, Tim. I tell you, I thought you were friends with me. No. So yeah, there you go. I'm looking for some recommendations from some people. Actually, the main one. So this truck, you know, I put this last truck's got about 120,000 kilometers on it. So not too bad. But I'm looking for a little bit of new gear. I'm looking for some good quality, long-lasting seat covers. I'm looking for a really thin profile steering wheel cover. And I'm looking for a change organizer for the vehicle. Just three things. I want to try to keep the vehicle in a little bit better shape, but I have a hell of a time. The steering wheel from all the kilometers I put into it is it's got where my thumb sits. It's got a groove worn in the side of the steering wheel. So I don't know. Anyway, I'm looking for something like that. So if anybody's got any recommendations, throw them at me. Had to fix a broken sink the other day. It was just a tiny little drip over at a rental. It turned out just to be the rubber seal of the basket in the kitchen sink. It probably would have been fine, but I tried to tighten it down. I'm like, nope. We're going to replace that whole thing before you break something, Tim. We got a good hammer in the snow a couple of days ago, and I got to use both my blowers. That was a lot of fun. I went down to Montana yesterday. Like, I got up at 6:30. I actually made really good time. 6:30 in the morning, drove to Montana, did a live stream on my way back, audio only, and got back by 5:30. So it was 11 hours. And it's supposed to be 10 hours of driving, and I waited at the border for an hour. So I made some pretty good time. beyond that, I also mailed out February's patches yesterday. So we're back on path. January's got really late because of a bunch of delays and different things. But so number one, we're back on. And then I've got March's patches coming that I'll throw in the mail as soon as I head down south. So keep an eye out. You're going to get almost two patches within a couple of weeks of each other. And this one's going to be good. This one was inspired by Mr. Chris Dixon himself. He sent me the idea for the patch, and then I had somebody design it. So thank you, Chris. I love it when you guys send me patch ideas. I got so many of them. It's going to take a year to get through half of what we have so far. I got 10 boxes of some cool goodies from a few different companies. We're going to open, we're going to do a vertical live stream from the garage. As soon as I get the Wi-Fi working, we're going to do a bunch of unboxing stuff. That'll be a lot of fun. And so Chris Dixon says it's tough to beat Northwestern seat covers. They look a little Western, but they last. Perfect. I knew you'd know, Chris. And neoprene wheel covers are great. I always rub through the wheel when I drive because I use it like a fidget spinner. Me too. That's exactly it. Right on the left side, right there. I got a wear spot there and another one up top. So that's great. And Gunfighter's Concealment really liked the CNN patch. I did too. I thought I had a copy here to show you. That was, I think, John Palmer. I could be wrong, but I believe he inspired that one night we were doing some live stream. So that's the best ideas come from you guys. We did an accelerator yesterday, which was so much fun. So Willow, who does Sunshine Prepper, she came out of that accelerator we did with Nicole and Sean. And basically it's where somebody comes in with a business idea or looking for a business idea, and we help walk them through it. So we did Ken Esch yesterday, and it's so rewarding. Is that the right? I love helping people with their business for what it's worth. So it was a lot of fun. If you haven't listened to that yet, it's on my channel and on Nicole's channel as well. But we're going to do a couple of more, and then we're going to open up. There's going to be a bit of a cost for doing this, but it's going to be a whole program that we do with folks where we do follow-up going on. But the first three, I think, are going to be free. So Ken's the first one. And I think we have two more that it's open. So if you go to Nicole's website, Living Free in Tennessee, you can get signed up for the next one. Sunday night, I got James from PBN coming on. It's going to be good. Him and I haven't talked since Prepper Camp. And speaking of Prepper Camp, it's going to be sad news for, not sad, but so I'm actually not going to be doing a fall road trip this year. I haven't worked out all of the ins and the outs, but I have told both Prepper Camp and Midwest Preparedness that I'm not going to be there this fall. And I'm going to miss a lot of people, but what I have realized is, and you guys will know this too, but my kids are not getting any younger. And I'm not using them as an excuse or a crutch, but And yes, I know I could make my road trip shorter, but I have decided that I am going to spend a little more time north of the border just for the next couple of 3 years or so till the girls graduate. And I've got a big project. I want to build a bathroom on the house this year. Doesn't mean I won't fly down to Tennessee and work on the property for a week or something, but there's not going to be any big epic road trip this fall. Just a 2 month road trip this spring. And that's going to be enough for me for this year. So anybody who we were hoping, yeah, I know. I'm going to miss you too, Jules. Anybody that was hoping to meet up with me, I'm going to a bunch of spring events, and we'll work out the details from there. But I just wanted to let people know, just so you knew, not that it's that big of a deal. It's just, I want to spend some more with the businesses and the kids and the projects. I am really excited about spending some more time at home. And Midwest Preparedness, good to see you in here. Said, it's all good. I love you. I'm thinking this is Patrick, and it might be Spags. I don't know, but either way, I love them both. Says, it's all good, Tim. We all make time for the things that matter the most, brother. Absolutely. It's not that you folks don't matter. It's just that my family matters a whole hell of a lot more to me. And I decided that I'm just going to do it because it's so foolish. But I remember when Dad used to take me around to badminton trips, I love taking the girls to sporting events. And you only got 3 or 4 years of this, guys. And I'm just loving it. Chris Dixon says, what you're not going to miss is your girls growing up. Proud of you and tough decision. And yes, Ellen, I thought about you too. She said, bummer. I'm going to miss a lot of people at Prepper Camp, but you know what? Prepper Camp's going to be there. My girls, they'll still be there, but they won't be there. So yeah. Anyway, I'm loving it. Thanks for everybody listening to me on that because yeah, it was a good time. It was a hard decision that I mulled over for probably too long, but I finally made it and I'm happy. And that night I decided, I felt significantly better. So Jules says kids grow up way too fast. Cherish the time you have. Yeah. And this is the last of them. We had three before this, and my oldest is 27 and Charlotte now also be 14 in May. They're going to be at Self-Reliance Festival too. So if anybody wants to meet up with them, they're going to be selling Canadian candies and chocolate bars. I'm pretty excited about that. So, all right. So next thing we have is the community nail bag. And this is where we dip into our community mailbag or nail bag. And I share with you some of the interesting comments or interactions that I've got in the last week from our fellow delinquents. And this week is mostly YouTube comments. There's some really good ones. But if you haven't noticed, I've been running a daily poll or a daily quiz on the community tab of the YouTube channel. YouTube's really pushing a community interaction, but I love it. I've been getting some really neat content ideas from you, but more than that, I just kind of get a feel for the people that are watching the videos, and it's neat. So, all right, here we go. Have a good night, Yozik. I always love having you in here, brother. All right, next thing is, this one comes from, who do we got first? Todd. And so I put up an, I guess this would be a poll, and I asked people, do you heat with wood or not? And I'll give you the results of that later, but this was one of the comments I got, and I really liked it. I thought I'd share it with you. So Todd says, we use a fireplace insert to offset our use of fuel oil. We burn about 10 to 12 face cord a year that I harvest from our land, but we store 2 years worth of wood at any given time. So we know that we'll always be warm. And it can also be a source of cash if we ever need it at any point in time. I love that. I am a big fan of multi-purpose preps. It keeps you warm. I love the old saying that wood heat's the only heat that heats you twice, once when you cut the wood and the second time when you burn it. But also, look at that. So they heat with wood that comes off their own land. They store 2 years ahead of time. And if they ever get in a rough way, they could sell it and get by for that year. What a wonderful balance. Next, this one comes from Michael Libby. And this was a response to something I mentioned in last week's episode. And they said, in my opinion, each person family should have 7 streams of income between job, company, and investments. That is what do they say? It's simple, but it ain't easy. Or it's easy. Yeah, that's what it is. Having multiple streams of income build so much resilience in your life. And I talk about it again, but you know, when COVID did all its bullshit and we had certain streams that we could keep doing and certain ones that weren't doing so hot, I'm telling you, there's nothing like entrepreneurship and multiple streams of income. Thanks for sharing that, Michael. This one here, a little bit longer, but I wanted to share it. Red 4-5. Anyway, this is about the DeWalt battery powered snowblower. And there's some good insight here, but they said, "Hey, I'm glad to hear you're from the prairies, the Canadian prairies. We have that kind of snow where I am in Montana. And in general, we get more powder dry snows with a few exceptions. But I called this a stay on the top of it snowblower." And this is, if you haven't watched my review on the battery powered DeWalt snowblower, I love the damn thing. It ain't cheap. It's not for everybody, but it is for some people. And this guy here said, "I call it a stay on top of it snowblower." Says, "I also have a two-stage Cub Cadet, old school, without the power steering, and it's great, but way too much for the 15 plus, so around 15 times of 3 to 6 inches we get a year." I get it. Totally get it. "So I understand your point of view, and I'm in complete agreement with your assessment for who this is for. I went to West Yellowstone here a year ago, and at the motel, shoulder-high snow." Oh, that makes me sick to my stomach. "Did their walkways and patio-like areas with a Cobalt single-stage battery-powered snowblower. If that doesn't tell you that battery-powered can do it, if you do it right, they were out there every day at least once, and most days we got 3 to 5 inches. It worked great. They even let me try it." That's something I would do. I'd be at a hotel in the wintertime. I'd be like, "Could I borrow your snowblower? Can I blow your walks for you? Because I just want something to do." I like that. "They did their walkways in the patio-like areas. It worked great. They let me try it. But then again, it did cost $500 with two batteries and a charger, which is still cheaper than the DeWalt. And I don't want to start a new battery platform." Also get it. "I already have FlexVolt tools." So that's the DeWalt 60 volt platform, "and big batteries. So the $600 for the tool only, I'm starting to pay attention. If I get one of our foot or more snowstorms that happen 2 or 3 times a year, I get the Cub Cadet out. But I'd love to just pop a battery into something like this and be done in 15 minutes. Or so with 3 to 5 inches for my 1,000 square foot driveway, back deck, and walkways. Great review." Well, thank you. And that's what I love about battery. And I haven't talked about this for a while, but I do love battery powered. Man, oh man. So if you're looking at it, the benefits are incredible. Just the fact that you can swap in and out anytime you want. Very little noise, no spilt gas, no fumes, no heat. Way better on your ears. The convenience factor blows me out of the water. You never have to start it. You never have to winterize it. There's so many things I love. Yeah. Are they underpowered compared to gas? Yeah, they are. But for me, now that I did away with all my other driveways and I just have mine and my son's across the street, battery has been where it's at. So John Palmer said, "You know, well, that is another prep. Moving somewhere where you don't need a snowblower could be a very wise decision for some folks." All right, next. This one is from Building the Ark. And this is a great comment, and I hope you guys appreciate it. He says, "Tim, my guy, I love your show, but the echo has got to go." I put that in here earlier. I really thought I had the echo worked out. Building the Ark, I appreciate you. This is why I love my community, because you're willing to tell me when something's not working. And thank you for that, because I want to fix it for you, and I want to fix it for me, because when I do things like this, it's about getting better every single week. So I'll get to the bottom of whatever's causing this issue. I know it definitely started when I started using the software mixer that makes my voice sound quite a bit warmer in the recordings, which I love and I'm not going to go away from. Just need to figure out what's going on with it. Bay State Prepper said, "Thanks for sharing your thoughts on content creation. I've been thinking about starting a channel in this realm. It's hard to get over the imposter syndrome, though, because I feel like I'm not an expert and I'm learning as I go." Then you are the perfect candidate to make content creation. I love hearing that. I love hearing it. We all suffer from imposter syndrome, whether it's starting a business, starting a new job. You know, even back when I first got engaged to Becky, it was the weirdest thing to go from boyfriend and girlfriend to fiance. And then when you're married, it's like, I got to say that we're married. It's just, it's cool. It's okay. And imposter syndrome is totally normal. And it just means you're humble. It gets better with time. You do get to the point where there's days you wake up and you think, I don't know why anybody ever listens to me. And that's okay. Trust me, it is. But if you're no expert, that's the best time to start, because as you learn, other folks will learn along with you. Wired Edge Workshop says, "I have the Ego chainsaw and trimmer. They are great. I'm too cheap for the snowblower." I get you, brother. I hope you're, I call you brother. I'm sure you are. But anyway, I have the Ego backpack blower with those two, I think they're 56 volt batteries. That thing is awesome. It has been perfect for the light, dry snow that we've had this winter. And every time I go to my local Rona, which is a Canadian hardware store that used to be owned by Lowe's and is no longer owned by Lowe's, I go in there and I look at that snow blower, the two-stage snow blower, and I thought, oh, I'd like that a lot. But anyway, moving right along. All right, finally, in the nail bag, we have a couple of the results from our polls this week, and I love it. So, first off, this one was a quiz. And the question was, what decade, if anybody wants to throw it out there, I will read you the results and then I will tell you the answer. But what decade was the word prepper first used? 96 answers. 2000, the decade of the 2000s, 11% said the 2000s. 24% said the 1980s. 29% said the 1950s. And 35% said the 1990s. Now, the correct answer was the 90s. It was actually first used, at least from what people can see, around the middle of 1999. And as you can guess, it was people who were preparing or prepping or becoming a prepper. Hey, Homestead Twins, great to see you. 1990s, yep, that's when the term prepper was first used. That doesn't mean the concept hasn't existed for millennia, but that's the first time it was used. I like that. Now, the next poll I did this week, and I like this one a lot, was the best overall fuel for a generator. I don't think I have ever seen the results of a poll come so close to being a four-way tie. It was great. And Homestead Twin said for Y2K, yep, that's what it was. So we had 138 votes on this one, best overall fuel for a generator. Check these numbers out. 23% said propane. 24% said gasoline, 24% said diesel, and 29% said natural gas. Now, that might be because a lot of people come to my videos based on my natural gas generator videos. I don't know, but I mean 23, 24, and 29%. I love it. And I do love natural gas. I'm not sure which one would be the one I would pick if I could only have one, but natural gas probably would be the one for right now. And Lone Star says before prepper, they were survivalists. Yep, they were survivalists. They were back to landers. They were retreaters back in the 50s. I love that term. And Homestead Twin says, I'd say propane because it stores indefinitely and you own it. I do like that too. Now, it is a finite supply. I guess I should have put solar on there too, right? And finally, the last quiz or the last poll that I put up this week that I really enjoyed was, do you heat with wood? And I didn't write down how many people responded, but it was over 100. So, yes, it's my primary, 16%. Backup, yes, I heat with wood, but it's my backup, 22%. And I have plans to in the future, but I don't right now, 41%. So 78% of folks in the workshop community heat with wood or have plans to do so. And I thought, yeah, that sounds about right. What a good prepper community we have. I even put in wood heat in my garage last year, which is our idea for in a short-term grid down scenario, say a week or two, we could sleep in the garage. And long-term, I'm just going to cut a hole in the outside of the house and I'm going to bring the wood stove into the house. So there you go. But yeah, there's nothing quite like wood heat. It's a purely renewable resource. The math goes like this. If you have a mature forest for firewood, every acre you have gains 3/4 of a cord every year. So if you figure out that you need 7.5 cord of wood per year, if you have 10 acres, you could cut your firewood off that every single year and never put a dent in your 10 acres. How cool is that? Plus trees and wood by their nature are sequestered carbon. I know, weird, hey? Anyway, moving right along. Final segment of the day is our creator spotlight. And this is a good one. This is actually another shorts guy. He is a YouTube shorts guy. I'm going to share this with you. His channel is called Plum Hero. And he's in New York City. Some of the messes he gets into are awesome. But what I love about this dude is he not only, everything's a minute long, he shows you how he fixes some crazy scenarios. But more than that, he is a born and bred entrepreneur who shares as much as he can all about how to make money in business. And he is a hustler in the best sense of the word. So if you're looking for some really good, quick kind of inspiration, and you know, you get both sides. You get the home maintenance, which we love here at the workshop, and you get the entrepreneurship, which we love here at the workshop. So give him a shot. It's Plum Hero. YouTube is at Plum Hero, and his link is in the description as well. I'm always looking for new content creators that I can get inspired from. And L2 Survive, great to see you. Another fellow content creator, folks, that you really should give a follow. He's got some really good stuff. Says, I have a wood stove, but won't use it until the power goes out. Exactly. And Jules says, that's good to know since I only have 108 AC. I didn't know that. Might have missed that. And that one probably went right over my head because I've been in five different directions here. But so anyway, if you're looking for a good creator, check out Plum Hero. So I believe that is everything for this week, folks. This was a great episode. I love doing these this week and prepping. Keep an eye out for where are we heading with this. A lot of these segments, I really love. Oh, there we go. Ah, thank you, L2 Survive. Jules has 1.08 acres. I didn't know that. But yeah, don't mind me, Jules. One of those nights, you know? But no, that's great. You know what? An acre is still an acre is an acre. So there you go. It's still something you could pull off of. And, you know, proud of you, by the way, Jules. I love hearing that. Thanks, John Palmer. John says, great stream tonight. So we're going to have some random vertical streams. There won't be any this weekend because I am going to be away at another volleyball tournament with the girls. Sunday evening will be an interview with the glorious commander of the Prepper Broadcast Network ship. That'll be James. I always love chatting with him. We have so much fun. Been a while. It'll be a good time for us to catch up. And keep an eye out for some shorts, some clips, not my shorts, but anyway, some clips. I've been turning these episodes into a ton of short fodder for the I don't know, the grinding wheel that is YouTube shorts, but it has certainly brought my subscribers up and it's brought a lot of new eyeballs. We, like I said, tonight we have Wired Edge Workshop, who is great, and they came in through the shorts feed. So all I want to do is be able to share the gospel of preparedness, repairedness, entrepreneurship, everything that the workshop stands for to as many folks as I can. So anyway, because of you guys, it's been great. This month is a short month, 29 days, and it's going to be my largest subscriber growth in a single month yet. So it's been good. So thanks, guys, for sticking with me on this journey. I love it. Remember, baby steps every single day. Get better, do a little bit, improve. And go out there, grab life by the balls, and build the life you want to live. Appreciate you, folks. We will see you Sunday evening right here. Same bat time, same bat channel. And as always, stay happy, stay healthy, and have a great week.